Has anybody any idea what's going on here? Yes, of course, it's Walt Disney's caricature of The Sorcerer's Apprentice by Paul Dukas from the cartoon film Fantasia. The apprentice thought he would try his hand, but the result was a total catastrophe. Picture two. Now, when I was 16, I left school and I served as an apprentice for 5 years with Cirque Heap Transfer. This is my certificate. After an initial period in the training room, I spent 3 to 6 months in each of the departments. And apprentices work with skilled craftsmen. They watch them and they copy them, but they do it themselves eventually, and that's how they build up their skill. Picture three. A disciple is an apprentice of Jesus. Disciples spend a considerable amount of time in Jesus' presence. They watched him, they listened to him, and over a period of 2.5 years, to this point in our reading, they began to pick up on his ways. Quite likely, we've been focusing on Jesus as we've read through the first half of the gospel. The most significant feature we have observed is that Jesus was a man of extraordinary authority. You might call him governor. In the Church of England, we had morning prayers, and sometimes we would start, "O Lord, our Governor, how majestic is your name in all the earth." One bright spark says, "Morning, Gov." I thought it was funny. I don't know whether you'd. But picture four, Jesus was an extraordinary man with extraordinary authority. Today, I want to look at what was happening to the disciples during Jesus' itinerant ministry in Galilee. It's a bit of revision, really. So, picture five, the disciples' journey. The story begins with four fishermen who were called by Jesus to follow him. Amazingly, they left their nets. And in fact, they left everything behind and followed him. Mark 1, verse 16. Later, we see that Jesus choosing 12 disciples, including the four already mentioned. They would be with him. They would also go out and preach themselves. Mark 3, verse 13. Jesus spent a lot of time explaining the parables to them, Mark 4, verse 10. Then we see the disciples in their own domain. As fishermen on the sea, they would be confident, usually, in their own expertise. But this time, they were terrified, Mark 4, verse 35. Jesus replaced that fear with peace. In Mark 6, verse 7, Jesus sent them out to do what had seen him doing. So they went and preached. They cast out demons, and they came back really happy and proud that they'd been successful. They came back full of happiness. One evening, Jesus had been teaching thousands of people. It was late. There was a huge crowd, and they were tired and hungry. Jesus said to his disciples, "You give them something to eat." And that totally floored the disciples. They felt completely out of their depth. Mark 6, verse 35. By the way, open, the idea was to follow this in your Bibles, but not all of you have got Bibles at the moment. Never mind. Then the disciples, until Jesus took over, not only were the thousands satisfied, but there was a lot to spare. Mark 6, verse 35. Then the disciples were out at sea again. Again, they were terrified until they realized that it was Jesus and that he had everything under control. Mark 6, verse 50. Then there was another teaching session. And again, thousands were hungry. But again, the disciples felt inadequate until, again, Jesus took over. The disciples served this miraculous food, and everybody went home happy and satisfied. Mark 8, verse 6. Then came the big test. Jesus confronted them with a big question. Who do you think I am? And Peter stood up and he said, "You're the Son of the living God." He gave a good answer. But then he immediately let himself down in Mark 8, verse 27. Jesus told them that he was going to Jerusalem to die. Peter probably voiced the opinion of all the disciples when he said, "No, Lord, that'll never happen to you." On one occasion, Jesus returning to his disciples, there was a commotion. A father had asked his disciples to cast the demon out of the boy, but they couldn't do it. Jesus asked, "Where has your faith gone?" And then he took over and healed the boy himself. Then Jesus announced his death the second time in Jerusalem, and the disciples did not understand. So far, the disciples aren't doing very well, quite frankly, are they? Out of 10, where 1 is not very good and 10 is very good, where would you put them? They got a couple of things wrong, right, but there was a lot of bumbling. They were just like apprentices. This brings us to today's passage. Before we go on, let's look at the disciples are up to. Let's look at our passage in our outline. Jesus has come down from the Mount of Transfiguration, Mount Hermon, and he approaches the north of Galilee, where Capernaum is. And he's changed. So one of the Gospels says that he set his face as a flint to go to Jerusalem, knowing what would happen. Previously, he would be walking here, there, and everywhere. But now it was a straight line due south to Jerusalem. So, Mount Hermon behind them, they descend. Lost my place, sorry. They descend the hills to Capernaum. Jesus is really feeding into the lives of his disciples. It's only a few weeks now before he will be taken from them. So coaching from Jesus for the disciples is very intensive. In verses 30 to 37, Jesus deals with an argument about status. In verses 38 to 41, Jesus deals with exclusivity. The disciples saw someone from outside casting out demons. Then in verses 40 to 52, Jesus is stern with the disciples. In chapter 10, verses 1 to 12, they've reached Transjordan. They've come down to below Galilee, and now they're moving down River Jordan. And they bump into some Pharisees, and Jesus has to deal with a false statement that the Pharisees were making about divorce. Tried to trick Jesus, and he gives them a very, very good answer, very helpful answer. Then in 13 to 31, they're approaching Jerusalem. In verses 13 to 16, the disciples are very offhand with some children. And in verses 16 to 31, the disciples are amazed by Jesus' attitude towards a rich man. So, the disciples in today's passage. We leave Jesus' discussion with the Pharisees for another occasion. It's Jesus' teaching about divorce, basically, and it needs some sort of studying to see what Jesus is saying. But what are the disciples up to now? Mark 9:34. You might say that the disciples are jockeying for position. Peter, James, and John had been up and seen the transfiguration. I can't help wondering what happened to Andrew, Peter's brother at this time, because they usually went out two by two. I wonder what happened to him. Anyway, Peter, perhaps that made them feel special. If they had been singled out for honour, did that mean they would have special honour in the kingdom? That kind of comment would no doubt rancour with the other disciples, and there was an argument about who was the greatest. Remember Cassius Clay? I'm the greatest. Jesus was aware of the argument, but he asked the question, what are you arguing about? Sometimes did that, if you notice in the Gospels. Jesus said, that's not how the kingdom works. The greatest in the kingdom are the lowest. The leaders are the servants. If you want to be in a place of high honor in the kingdom, then you must be humble. Then the disciples showed signs of exclusivity. One of the disciples had seen a man who was casting out demons. And surely that's something only the disciples should do. Shall we go and stop him? Actually, do you remember the last time that they tried to do that? Was that for that father? And they couldn't do it. It wasn't until Jesus came back that the lad was healed. Jesus said, no, don't stop him. He's doing a good thing. He that is not against us is for us. We're surrounded by other churches of other denominations. They all do different things and differently to ourselves. Our tendency might be to say, well, they're not quite right. They don't do it right, so we won't have anything to do with them. No, says Jesus. That's wrong. look for points of agreement. Recently, I read a statement which was made by the Pope, and it said, I read it and I thought it was Billy Graham, because what he was saying was the sort of thing that you might expect Billy Graham to say. Look for points of agreement. Yes, there are differences, and we treasure our differences, but look for points of agreement. Well, now we come to some very stern words of Jesus. The disciples were weak-kneed. Mark 9, verse 42. By that, I mean they needed substance and structure in their lives. Jesus' words were extremely severe. If your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. If your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. Ooh, good grief. What does that mean? Well, Jesus was always strong and resolute and dependable. Not so the disciples. They were easily caught off guard. Jesus says it's extremely important that you stay true to your calling. If you see something that entices you away from the truth, look the other way. If you find yourself walking on a path that veers away from Jesus' path, turn around immediately. Be resolute about this. And that's how Jesus puts it. Very strong. You see, there was a large crowd of people that were watching Jesus and the disciples. Some of the people were not yet have come to faith. The disciples have a responsibility not only for themselves before Jesus, but for other people. Don't do anything that causes someone to stumble in their faith. To me, though, the biggest mistakes that the disciples made was that they had no time for children. Moms loved to chat together whilst the children enjoy themselves playing with each other, skipping, making a lot of noise, joyful noise. The parents saw Jesus coming from the distance and they grabbed the children's hands and said, "Come on, let's go," so that Jesus could touch them. They were good parents. The disciples shouted at the children and pushed them away. And then Jesus told them off. "Let them come." He puts his arms around them, around the little ones, and bless them. What a lovely picture for Mother's Day. Jesus encourages parents to do their best for their children. I'm sure Jesus would have approved of Mother's Day. I was down at Asda yesterday, and I kept seeing these lads coming out of the shop carrying bouquets of flowers, obviously for their mums. Jesus would have approved of that, I'm sure. It's a lovely thing. And in this area, there are many families who are struggling. This church needs to find a way of providing blessing for them. We need to pray and encourage the leaders of Rainbow Club. God bless the families today, especially. The disciples had a wrong ideas about wealth. They could see Jerusalem in the distance now. They were approaching Jerusalem. A man came out and spoke with Jesus. He was obviously dripping with wealth. He could see that Jesus was godly. "How can I come into your kingdom?" "Obey the commandments," said Jesus. "I've always have done from since I was a little boy." Jesus had an amazing way of seeing through people. "Go, sell everything you have, and then come and follow me." The man thought about it, and he went away broken. You see, his riches had imprisoned him. Jesus turned to his disciples. Maybe the words that he'd shared with them, "Those that follow me should deny themselves, take up their cross and follow me." Maybe those words stung. Good old Peter, he popped up. "Well, we've left everything." Jesus told him, "Yes, and there is so much more to come. You can never give and outgive Jesus. The more you give, the more he will give to you." And look, my friends, we've got a wonderful future to look forward to in the kingdom of God. And this challenge comes to us. It's not easy being a disciple. Discipleship itself involves discipline. An athlete preparing for an event aims to be in peak condition. She goes without luxury foods and exercises rigorously. Disciples sometimes fast so they can pray more intensively. They regularly set aside a time for prayer and Bible study. They give time to God. How important is it for you to be the best disciple that you can be? Out of one, on a scale of 1 to 10, again, where one is the least important and 10 is the most important, where would you put the different things in your life, such as home, family, good food, drink, car, God? If God is not at the place of highest authority, highest priority, then are you a true disciple? That's what Jesus demands. So the disciples weren't stacking up at all that well, really, were they? And yet, these were the men that Jesus had chosen to continue his ministry after he'd gone. He set a lot of store by them. At the end of the passage, they are on the hills outside Jerusalem. Jesus is leading the way, determined to enter that city to die for them, for you and me. He has a heart for the men that he's chosen. He's got a heart for you and me. Following him come for the bumbling disciples, Jesus' apprentices. They had confused ideas about the kingdom, and they weren't sure what was going to happen next. Footnote: Jesus has called us to be his disciples. Important though it is to take our first step of faith, that is only but the beginning. But we're all works in progress. Not one of us can say, yeah, I've got it. We're still learning, and we will be learning till the day we die. But we're apprentices, we're disciples. Jesus has chosen us. He sees in us potential. Would you believe that? In me, to carry the baton in our generation. Let's do everything to grow into a life of discipleship. Don't think you're too old either, because God's heroes, I can think of three of them: Noah, Abraham, Moses. They were 80 when they started out. God bless you.